What is up, guys? Welcome back to the Zach and Pat Show. I'm Zach.
I'm Pat.
This is the show about manhood, fatherhood, entrepreneurship, and the mentality it takes to be successful at those things. And we'll probably sprinkle in some helpful real estate advice, too, because that's what Pat and I do. You know, guys, life can be tough. We can go through some things and struggle at times, but this is the show to let you know that you're not alone. So if you're someone out there going through any of these things, this is the show for you. Shout out to our friends at NeuroGum for keeping us energized and focused. NeuroGum is a chewing gum, as well as they have mints. And it's got caffeine, L-theanine, vitamins B6 and 12, helps with memory and focus. I like to chew it really all the time. If I'm driving around showing houses, out with my clients, if it's later in the afternoon and I don't want to grab another coffee or energy drink and I just need a little something, I'll just pop a piece of NeuroGum. So get out there and try some NeuroGum.
Also, producer Murph here on behalf of Captain Beard Co. We are a St. Louis local grooming company. We aim to create a product that is simple in formula. I mean, we have seven or less ingredients in every given product and something that we actually make by hand. And I know from personal experience, whenever I started my men's grooming journey, really taking care of my beard, sculpting it, shaping it, making sure that I looked presentable and took pride in my appearance. One of the things is I wanted to invest in some men's grooming products. A lot of the beard oils I've used in the past have been really greasy and lubey and stain your clothes and otherwise leave residue on your hands. You won't get that with us. We have amazing scents. We have a few amazing products. And at the end of the day, we are all about educating you on why you should use something instead of just hoisting product your way. So if you're a man looking to groom better, or if you're someone who wants to get something for a man who's looking to groom better, give us a check out at Captain Beard Co.
All right, guys. And now to introduce our awesome guest today. He's a friend of mine. He's a real estate agent. He's lived numerous lives, and we're gonna get into all that. The great and powerful Ryan Hansen.
What's up, guys?
Thanks for coming on.
Quite the introduction. All right.
Absolutely, bro. Well, we were kind of talking before the show. You and I got to know each other through First Form originally, and you obviously started training jiu-jitsu at Watson's
a little bit ago. You were the push.
Well, thanks. I'm glad you ended up showing up, because man,
makes everyone drink the punch.
Yeah. I feel like I just try to convince everybody I know.
He just wants to beat the shit out of all of us.
Come on.
I want to beat you guys up. I got to show you that I'm a tough guy.
So we go back, probably we were just talking about 2016 when I was with First Form. I think we actually first met at Summer Smash, Smash. Mm-hmm. We've been in and out of each other's lives ever since. And I think now with the jiu-jitsu, thanks to you, I see you way more often, and thanks for having me in.
Of course, absolutely, man. Yeah. So yeah, that was one thing I wanted to ask you, is kind of whatever happened with First Form, because I don't believe you're with them anymore.
Yeah. So I got with them in 2015. I was one of the first athletes that won the athlete search. Okay. That was the original five. There was me, Big Ty, Marissa, Amy. At that point, First Form was just starting out. They were in Green Park. They had a small little headquarters. It was a crazy story how I got into that with Sal and Andy, and it was a complete surprise, and became an athlete. I was with them until I basically shut down my gym. So before real estate, I was a personal trainer. I had a gym for probably 3 or 4 years. And then I just got burnt out on fitness, being a trainer, being an expensive babysitter at the end of the day. You're just kind of making sure that the client stays consistent. And after 10 years of doing it, I was this isn't for me. So I shut down the gym, actually moved back to New York City, Brooklyn, where I'm from. And then with that transition, I think First One was just he's not really in the industry anymore. Mm. I got into restaurants and just kind of parted ways, but it was an unspoken thing. I kind of have always done my own thing. I didn't have the social media following that a lot of these guys had, that had 500,000, 600,000. I was just a local dude that had a gym. So I appreciated the opportunity because it opened a lot of doors, but I never really felt like I fit in with what they were trying to go for with that whole very heavy social media presence, very heavy sponsorships, and just really just posting a lot. It wasn't my thing. I was training clients.
Yeah.
No bad feelings, nothing, anything negative happened. Just parted ways. I'm not in the industry at all. I mean, I obviously work out, I stay in shape, but I'm not actively, taking the supplements or training clients or doing online coaching.
Okay. I was always wondering kind of what happened.
Yeah. A lot of people ask me, the progression of things. When I moved back to New York City, I just stopped getting the phone calls, and obviously they're a huge company. I don't expect them to be hey, let's sit down and talk. And I just stopped getting, my phone stopped ringing. So I was all right, well, I guess that's the end of that.
Yeah. Well, fair enough.
Yeah. And then, I ended up moving back to St. Louis after New York when COVID hit. And then I got into restaurants and then got into real estate. I'd always been doing Airbnb. But now I'm also a full-time realtor. Yeah,
love
just
it.
Like you. And also do jujitsu just like
would you agree that Brooklyn has the best pizza?
New York City has the best pizza. Do you know why?
Why is that?
The water.
Yeah. That's what
the
I was
water. Right. So it's a harder water. So their bagels are really good. Well, I'm biased, but the bagels, the bread, and the pizza tend to be just different based on the water. And when I moved to St. Louis, that was totally different pizza style that I never even...
Yeah, everyone hates what's our pizza.
Everything was different, right? The water, the shape, the cheese you guys put on it.
Provel!
It was like, this is not pizza. It felt like a cracker.
It's a cracker.
Yeah, for real.
That's what everyone says.
I mean, I love it, but...
love it.
I embrace the St. Louis culture behind it, but, you know, I'm a city, New York City kid at heart.
If you're not from here, it's you can't even adjust to it.
I've had it probably 3 or 4 times, and I'm just like... All right.
Yeah, it's fine for what it is.
If you're from here, it's probably in your blood. Yeah, I mean, it makes sense.
But. I think it's still better than Detroit style pizza, though.
What's Detroit?
Little Caesars and Jets.
Like the thick,
It's like knockoff Chicago pizza, if anything.
It's funny how different regions have different their styles, pizzas, right? Yeah. I think St. Louis, I think what we have is exclusive to us.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, and it's like, I don't think it's as popular, across, I feel like you can go anywhere and order Chicago, of Chicago style pizza.
It's a brand.
Pizza. Like, you've heard of that.
Or
New York style pizza, Louis style.
Unless somebody is from St. Louis and moves to a different place, I've heard that happen where like people will live in Florida and they'll have like gooey butter cake and pizza, but they'll bring it, you know,
they're from
a transplant.
Our food probably has the biggest diabetes culture to it.
Dude, that was the thing with personal training, dude. It was really hard to convince somebody to give up gooey butter cake and like Budweiser and work out. Like it was like going uphill. It was swimming upstream. Whereas like, I felt like if I was in New York City, it's more health conscious. People are more aware to it. They're more willing to invest versus, unfortunately, our environment. People, don't want to give that shit up.
Right.
Am I allowed to curse on that?
Oh, yeah.
Fuck yeah.
So was your gym here in St. Louis or did you go back in New York?
Yeah, so I moved here in 2010, 2011 from New York City.
And what brought you here?
Originally a job. So I graduated college when the market was destroyed and melted in 2008, 2009.
Okay.
And nobody in New York City or even across the country was hiring. Like everything was going to shit. So I originally moved here to work with Wells Fargo on the fixed income and trading floor and kind of being like a liaison between a broker and an FA. So it was like this weird, you know, it was the after college job that you're supposed to get when you have the degree.
Of course.
So I moved here, actually, it's still there, the Wells Fargo downtown.
Off of Jefferson?
Yeah, exactly. Off of Jefferson. And I did it for a month and hated it. I knew right away. Yeah, I was like, this is not for me. I went to school for entrepreneurship. I'd always thought I'd be a, you know, solopreneur or somebody who had their own business. And I moved here, hated it, but I was here. I was living on Wash Ave. I had a loft and I wanted to be some way in the fitness industry. And then I ended up becoming a personal trainer for Club Fitness to Lifetime Fitness, and then Lifetime to my own gym. So I've been here.
What
since
was like the progression there? How many years like went before?
It was about like
thing?
2 to 3 years at each of those. So I was like 2 years at it's not there anymore. The Club Fitness off of Del Mar in U City.
Okay.
It was like above a Mission
Yeah,
Taco.
Yeah. I remember that. Yeah.
It was the second floor.
Yep.
That was my first ever training job. Actually, my first ever training job was Finney's.
Really?
Jesse.
Wow. Small world.
Back in the day, I think I answered an ad. This is like 2011.
All-in-one fitness, right?
All-in-one fitness. He had just bought that. It was a Bally's. He had just bought that. And I didn't know anything about MMA or martial arts, but I knew that they had that in the first level and the gym was above it. And I think I answered an ad, dude, on Craigslist for a job. Like it was 2011. Like when that was like a thing, people would like post. Yeah.
Craigslist was.
That was like where you'd find jobs. So I ended up getting a job for them. They kind of trained me how to be a trainer, but my first real training job was actually at Club Fitness. And then I went to Lifetime for a couple of years. And then I actually lost the Lifetime job because of First Form.
Really?
They saw it as a conflict of interest because I was representing another company that sold supplements, First Form. And then Lifetime also has their own supplement line. So I was appearing in like, you know, First Form at the time, their Instagram and their all that stuff. And then my boss at Lifetime was like, dude, you can't be like pushing First Form products and also be at Lifetime. And I kind of knew we were on the outs and I wasn't really agreeing with what management was doing. So I luckily met a guy who had a CrossFit gym and he had extra space. So I was So I ended up getting fired literally a couple of weeks after I got the First Form deal and then opened up like a small section of my gym inside this CrossFit gym and was paying him $1,000 a month.
So that was like the first primal?
Yeah, that was honestly, that was the first primal. And we kind of split the gym down the middle, literally had that for probably 2 years, then opened up my own spot right next to Fit Flavors off of, what is that? Clayton Road in Chesterfield. Oh, okay. Yeah. So it was in Chesterfield, to make a long story short, it was in Chesterfield. And I had that for, that's a long way to get there. I had that for about a year, and the issue was I got burnt out. I turned 30. I was like, what am I doing? I've been doing a personal training for 10 years, and my rent was super high. It was like $4,000 a month.
Oh,
so I went from $1,000 a month sublease to $4,000. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh, thinking I was big shit. I'll grow into the space. You know, if you build up, they'll come. I just had the first form. Well, I was still on that first form kick. Wave. I had a lot of attention on me. So I was like, yeah, I'll open up a 2,000 square foot gym. I'll get the clients.
Because I got this big, I got these people behind me. That's
I thought I was going to be solid. And I mean, I was growing, but just not at the rate I needed to. So that's actually why I got into real estate at the time, because I just bought my house too. I couldn't afford my $2,000 a month mortgage and the $4,000 a month gym. Mm. So I started renting out my extra bedrooms. I had a 3-bedroom on Airbnb. And then I was making enough to cover my mortgage and then some for the gym.
Oh, wow.
So it was a crazy.
So you're like using Airbnb.
I was like trying to make it. So I was putting a lot of effort into the gym. And then at one point I was like, wait a second. I'm getting up at 5 a.m. trying to train my clients, and I'm doing really well on Airbnb real estate. Why don't I start to figure out what to do with this?
Yeah.
Because, you know, the whole thing, you can have real estate be somewhat of a more passive income stream versus grinding it out every day at the gym from 5 a.m. to 8 p.m.
Right.
Training. So I had these two things going on at the same time where I was training, but also running an Airbnb out of my house, almost like a hostel because it was the extra bedrooms.
That's gotta be kind of weird having people like
come in. I was single at the time. It was fun. Like, there was definitely not, it's not ideal because you have strangers coming in and out, but, you know, I was younger then, I was single. I actually hung out with some of my guests. Like we'd go to like restaurants and pizza places and I'd give them recommendations, but every weekend for probably 3 years, there was some people staying at the house.
Weird.
But it paid my mortgage.
So, and that's still the house you live in today?
Yeah, so that's still the house we live in today. I rent it out full time.
Okay.
Either I stay with my girlfriend. Well, now she lives with me, so that doesn't happen. But we were kind of going back and forth, which was a pain in the ass. But it does well in terms of like $500 a night, 2-night minimum.
Damn, 500 a night, huh?
$1,000 a weekend. And so it makes sense. Or we travel. Or right now we're staying at a friend. Like we have somebody staying there for like 5 days. We have a friend down the street that we just kind of crash at his place.
Yeah.
So we're trying to actually take it off Airbnb and go a different direction with the real estate stuff. It's really hard to like be moving out and like cleaning and flipping and then having clients call me and just a lot of moving parts now. So I've done Airbnb since I bought that house in 2017.
And where's that one?
It's actually right by Watson's. It's
really?
Two blocks, dude.
Really?
Wow. It's right by the Chaffetz Arena.
Okay.
And so it's a cool loft.
Perfect spot.
So
I've seen the pictures. It looks sick.
When I bought it.
For $500 a night, it better, you know.
Yeah,
it's sick. You know?
It's dope, dude. Like, I mean, it's 2,400 square feet. It's got a jacuzzi tub, movie theater, fireplace, 35 foot. It used to be a car dealership.
Okay.
An old Ford dealership. It was built in like 1902. Got the brick, the tin ceiling. So it's beautiful. But it's like my baby. So. Yeah, I rent it out still, but I think this month is probably going to be the last month. We're probably going to try to buy something, live there full-time, and never mess with it. And just have that be a full-time
Airbnb. Yeah, because right now, what I was going to say. I was like, dude, I mean, you're in the industry. I'm sure you can find something.
Yeah.
Like, go find like a small house somewhere you're like, dude.
That's what we're looking for because, this back and forth now. We have two cats now. It's like. Like
yeah,
because
then
circus.
you gotta pack everybody
I'm like
up.
In the truck, like, all right.
Yeah, everybody, come on, let's get all our shit.
And it's happened every weekend. So we leave our stuff there for the most part. Like, we have a closet we lock up and like we have to take all our food out. But, you know, we have an actor stay there. We're right by the Fox Theater. So we had actors stay there for like 2 weeks and I think they paid like $3,000.
Wow.
So, it's pretty, it's good. It makes it worth it. But I'll always have it, but I need something else to be like more permanent and not be so like, you know, unsteady with stuff.
You're a professional mover at this point.
Yeah, no, we have a system down, bro. I can get it done in like an hour. I can move out of the house in an hour.
That's awesome.
Wow.
And it's funny, you actually become more like, I don't know, conscious or like, I don't like minimal. You just
minimalistic.
start getting ripped. Like you don't need all this stuff.
Oh
like
my
I pretty much like pack a suitcase that I would take. And there's like three outfits and I just run through them for like 4 or 5 days. Yeah. It's just, it's interesting. You realize how much stuff you really don't need And you really like get real smart and efficient with it.
That's awesome.
Oh, that's smart.
That's a silver lining. Right?
No, it's great. I mean,
but it's a pain in the ass to move out of your house every weekend.
And so how long have you been in real estate now? Like, so, have yeah, you been so licensed?
The first, like I said, the first, like a, I guess attempt was Airbnb back in 2017, but I got my license last year. Actually, a guy I met at the gym that, Fit City.
Okay.
We started, we were just sitting, he had a bunch of tattoos that were really good. We started talking about that and he's like, I'm an agent. And I was like, oh, I do Airbnb. He's like, I always wanted to do Airbnb. And I said, well, I've always wanted to be more into real estate. So we kind of like started talking about stuff. And I think we got coffee the next week. So you should just get your license and see what happens. This was last year. I got my license, was with a brokerage. You know, when you first get in, you don't really know what you're doing. You don't know where
it's a mess.
Yeah, it's kind of.
You need, at least this is my opinion, and this is what happened to me, and I just kind of got really lucky with this, is you just really need to find a good mentor and, like, have someone that's really going to kind of show you the way. And, like, because there's a million different ways to do this thing is what I'm realizing.
I didn't know that. I thought there was really, like, one way to do it, but there's.
I mean, I've seen, like, there's a lot of different agents that do things very, very differently mm-hmm. than I do it. And it might work for them, but it's not something I wanted. You know, it's just you got to figure out what works for you.
I always, because when my only experience with real estate was Airbnb and then obviously buying my own house. So I didn't know it was kind of like pick your own method. I thought it was just one size fits all. This is how you buy a house, how you sell a house, this is how you inspect. No, it's your own business. So you can choose and
whatever
kind
of
whatever works for you.
You know, the way I think about it is, I mean, I think this is my real estate coach kind of told me this once and it's something that's always stuck with me, but he's like, you need to think of yourself as a marketing company that sells real estate.
Yeah.
Cause that's really what it is.
I never knew that until when you really are in it, that's when you understand that
you're like, oh, okay, yeah. Well now, you know, I mean, there's a bunch of different ways to do marketing. You know, you see
video. I mean, your
videos, that's my marketing.
It's attention.
This is my marketing. You know, it's like, obviously we talk about a lot of shit here, you know, we don't talk about all real estate, but you know, it's a good portion of it. You know, it usually ends up coming up and you know, and that's the stuff that he'll clip up and he'll throw online and like, oh shit, this guy knows what he's talking about when it comes to real estate.
I'll say you're doing a great job of the social media arm of it too, especially, and bringing in the jujitsu mm-hmm. and having that. Yeah. So I think you're doing a great job of marketing. Cause I thought it was just like, you want to buy this house? Here you go. No, it's everything else.
I want to market to, I want to work with people that are like me,
like you
know,
that's why I told
my
broker.
Huge portion of my business is my friends from either the jiu-jitsu gym or the CrossFit gym. My friends that like I grew up with, you know, people, and I've been to St. Louis my sphere of influence. I've been here my whole life. So that's a big advantage that I have over, over you.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
No offense, but like that is a big advantage that, you know, I've been here my whole life. So I went to, you know, 12 years of school here. So even the people that I don't like, for example, I got this guy, we're going to be listing his house and helping them buy. So that'll be a double dip situation where I help them sell and then I help them buy. But like we went to high school together. I like had to like call a couple of my buddies. I was like, hey man, do you remember this guy? Cause I kind of remember him. Like I remember, you know, and like, ended up going over there and I'm helping him and his wife sell. But like we were friends on Facebook and that's how he remembered that,
and
you know,
saw you
and
posting,
he saw my post and, you know,
seeing you were consistent.
Exactly. And he reached out one day and I was like, oh, cool. Yeah. I think I kind of remember you. And then we got over there and we were laughing about that. He's like, yeah, we weren't really like friends, were we? And I was like, I no offense. I had to kind of like call a couple of people and like, you know, try to remember who you were. Yeah. Yeah. No offense, Colin. It's just funny. It's just how it goes. And there's a bunch of different ways to do it.
Yeah. That is one thing about St. Louis is it is so close knit and the whole, you know, stereotypical, where'd you go to high school? I didn't have that. So I've had to build my own relationships and friendships through my own means, usually from the gym, honestly, and just old clients. That was difficult. A lot of my stuff right now is coming through Zillow, just a way to start.
Yeah.
But to your point about the mentor, dude, that was like the game changer. Because I was at another brokerage that I thought was going to be a different situation. You know, things happen, whatever. So I ended up switching. And the brokerage I'm at now, shout out to Schneider Real Estate, they've been great. Like my mentor, Nick specifically, and then also Jeremy, like Nick's my direct. They've both been a really big help.
Jeremy Gabris?
No, Jeremy Schneider. He owns the company. Okay. Yeah. He actually bought into this brokerage that's been around in St. Charles since like the 70s. They have a huge, like, you know, reputation. They're great. They're solid. There's no shade, you know, with real estate, there could be some shady stuff going on.
Right.
So they're solid and they've had a really good training program that they put me through and they're always there to answer my questions. But that was the thing. Cause I went into real estate, not knowing anything, not knowing, like I said, like what the agent's responsibility was, or as the owner's responsibility. And I was like, that first brokerage, I was like, this is not. And then the second one, I've gotten more comfortable. I've learned a lot. And I've been doing it for, I would say, consistently for the past like 3 or 4 months. And I've sold, I think, 6 houses, which is not bad.
No, that's great.
Really good.
Yeah. It's really good.
I didn't know like the metrics. I'm like, I don't feel, but I talked to my broker. I've talked to other people like, yeah, you're on the right track. It just takes time to build that relationship and build, you know, that like, okay, this person I sold the house to, they may buy another one or sell that one in the next 3 or 4 years. Yeah. You got to hold on.
100%. Right. And, you know, like a way I think about it too is, you know, every single person I work with, it's like, you got to think of them. It's not just that one transaction. It's like, man, I want to be a real estate agent for life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also like, I want to be a real estate agent for life, but I also want to be all your friends and family's real estate agent for life. So I want to do such a good fucking job that you tell all your friends and family. So that
and that's the best marketing.
Yeah, exactly.
Word of mouth.
Create raving fans.
Exactly.
That book is awesome if you haven't read it.
Oh, I haven't.
Is that Seth Godin? Who's that?
Who was that wrote it?
Some Simon Sinek or something. Or I don't know. Or Daniel Pink.
Ken Blanchard.
Okay, never mind. Totally off.
Yeah.
But yeah, to your point, like that's honestly like that's what social media is. Mm-hmm. It's word of mouth, just in a virtual,
thing.
Handheld version.
Exactly.
But I believe, yeah, like to your point, Zach, if you do a good job or an exceptional job, that person has no option but to tell somebody. So yeah, that's my way to do it, to really treat my clients like obviously I don't have a lot of clients, so I can really focus on them. So building that relationship and making sure you're going above and beyond will eventually lead to hopefully, you know, more business.
It will.
Just being a good realtor. Like that's also just being a good person.
Know what's going on, you know, and be good at communication. I feel like is another huge piece.
So that's a piece I missed. I didn't realize how communicative you have to be because it moves so quick. So like calling people, I mean, who really called? I didn't really call people. It was just very quick. Like text here and there, like I'm having to answer the phone. I'm at the store. I'm at the gym, like trying to fix deals, save things, inspectors. So that was all new to me too. My social skills or my, I guess, extroversion
You
have to be, networking events and all that. And I was always pretty open and social but this is a new level of like, you're constantly on the phone, with clients or with bot, you know, all that.
Well, that's super important. I mean, especially on my end of it, on the mortgage side.
Your mortgage?
Like the communication between the loan officer and the agent is huge.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I've got a deal right now that I call the agent and I can't get through to him. And there's been things that have been going on because I took a deal over and they gave me 10 days to close it because of the holiday in there. And we're starting from scratch. And I'm just like, and we have to get the condo approved. We got to get all this stuff
approved. It's a condo too?
Yeah.
Oh, good luck with the HOA.
Everything that's going on right now. Yeah. But we're the only ones because that's the problem. This was the third contract on this condo. And
is it in Brentwood Forest?
No, that's done. Brentwood Forest
that's a nightmare.
Brentwood Forest, unless you got somebody buying cash, that's the only way those things are gonna get done. 100%. Not even they can't even go non-warrantable anymore.
Yep.
But this one here, like there's certain things, ins and outs that we are able to get through on our end. That's I don't know why other ones haven't been able to figure this out yet. But I got a deal closed, and that listing agent called the agent that I closed the deal with from Keller Williams and was like, "Hey, who did this?" So that's how I got the deal.
So yeah, you made it happen.
Yeah. So that's, I got the deal and now, you know, they're like, oh, we got to do this, but we get it. I don't know if the appraisal side of it, like it came back appraised too high and came back with a score.
They needed the gap
Well, no, the gap, they already knew they were buying it for 200 and the sale, it appraised at 196. Okay. So they already knew that, but even at the 196, so appraisals get graded on a scale of 1 to 5 by Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. A 1 being the most accurate, 5 being over, highly inaccurate. Anything above a 3 requires a second review called a CDA. So we got this and we're putting it through, but we submitted for the CDA, but you have the holiday in there. So they're backlogged on that already. We were supposed to close last Friday. And I'm telling these guys, I'm like, listen, we're going to have to push it until we get the CDA. We're not clear to close until that CDA approves this value. Mm-hmm. And we got it yesterday, but they pushed closing, but I'm trying to call the agent and explain this to her. And I'm not able to get through.
Yeah.
And I'm like, so.
Like, she won't pick up the phone or you just won't answer?
I called, left a message, and then hear back, and then called her again to explain it, left a message, and then she didn't call me back until like 6 o'clock at night.
I mean, I think.
I called her like 10 o'clock in the morning to explain this. Like, hey, we need to push closing. I thought we would have the CDA back.
Yeah.
They're behind. They're pushing it. They're pushing us out another couple of days. So we need to push closing. No answer. So I'm calling the listing agent, who's the one that got it over. I'm like, hey. here's where we're at. If you're able to get through to her, let her know. I haven't been able to. It just drives me nuts when I can't. Like,
that's correct. Yeah.
Because here's the flip side. You guys call me. Yeah. You expect me to answer that phone immediately, or if not, I'm getting back to you within a timely manner. I expect the same thing. You know, and
that's agent 101, right. Yeah. To be able to have that open, like, communication back and forth. I don't understand people that don't.
Agents. I went when I took you know, the class to get my license. You know, obviously, you know, stereotypically, you don't really learn much from that class that you're actually going to use. You know, but the one thing that one of the instructors said once that always kind of stuck with me, he's like, "Man, anytime my phone rings, I answer it. Anytime, because when my phone rings, that means there's money in it. You know,
yeah."
It's like, that's a good way to think about it.
The instructor?
If it's a random phone number, like, I always answer it.
Yeah.
You know, half the time it's a VA or
but
a
that's
kind of
that goes against what I think, honestly, like, general people. Nobody answers the phone, especially with numbers that they don't know. But
one thing I'll tell you.
I always call them back.
If you're in sales.
Like, a 314 number? Hey, I just missed a call from this number.
They're like, what the hell?
Yeah, I don't care. You know,
one thing I'll tell you guys that Guild has us doing, we got a spreadsheet. I think you and I looked at it, but track how many calls you get. And then, like, how many leads, what percentage of those leads convert, and then, like, the actual dollar amount, and then work backwards to figure out how much each call
is worth.
Ooh,
that's because when you look at it, that way, so
you're gonna pick up that phone when you see it's worth a couple grand.
So on our end, it's not quite that high, but, you know, like, I did the numbers last year. Every phone call that I received was like $600.
So you're gonna pick up that phone.
Yeah, absolutely.
Pick up that phone.
So. Yeah.
Which is so, like, basic one-on-one, right? Pick up the phone or like follow up. That's huge stuff.
Huge. I mean, the follow up is that's like 101. Yeah. You gotta follow up. I mean, especially like
honestly, because I think people just forget. I don't think it's, like, you know, on purpose. I think we have so much going on that you have to just create those opportunities for people to talk and open that conversation more.
I also think it's their systems too. You know, it's like, you need to kind of have systems in place on, like, okay, this is my day where I follow ups with these people, or this is my day where
I read Ryan Serhant's book, Sell It Like Serhant. Yeah. And he was talking about how he structures his day into, like, a block where, like, the first block is, like, prospecting. The second block is usually, like, showings or, like, active business. And the third block is, like, networking.
Yeah.
So that way, because when you first start, it's kind of like, what do you do with your day? You don't, especially when you're first starting out.
That's the hardest part for agents.
I'm like messing with my fucking email signature.
It's like, it's like you're playing business.
I
need to get my business card. I need to set up an LLC. Yeah. I need to do, get business. Let's get some money coming through the door. And
fuck around with all the fun stuff.
We've talked about it a few times, but we call it our non-negotiables. Like, these are this is my non-negotiable for Monday, non-negotiable for Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And my day is not complete until those non-negotiables are done. Yeah. And it's time blocked in there.
You have a list of things you have to do
every like Mondays. So it's like this will be repeating for people that have heard it, but Mondays I call real estate agents to try and set up appointments. Okay. So like that's my goal.
That's your goal for the day.
Yeah. Call and get at least two appointments set up for the next week. But ultimately, I'm calling a minimum of 10 agents to get those appointments. Tuesday updates. So every deal that I have that's under contract, I'm calling the buyer, buyer's agent, and listing agent to let them know where everything's at and how things are moving. Wednesdays, we've got the podcast, but that's when my follow-ups are for, like, anniversaries, past client birthdays. If it's the last Wednesday of the month, I'm following up with clients that just closed previously whose first payment's coming due.
Nurturing those relationships.
Yeah, first payment's coming due. Hey, you know what? Hey, we need to get your account set up. I just shoot them a quick text. Let me know if you need help getting your account set up. Thursdays and Fridays are for my people that are pre-qualified and pre-approved. The pre-quals, I'll reach out like, hey, we're still pre-qualified. We're not fully pre-approved yet. You know, are you ready to start looking? If so, I need to do the full credit pull, or I'm still missing these docs. Can you get these turned into us? Do you have any houses that you're wanting to go see? Also, on Thursdays, I'm sending out text messages Thursdays and Fridays to clients that are fully pre-approved. Hey,
what are you looking at this weekend?
You guys got any houses you want to see numbers worked up for? So that way they're heading into the weekend and prepared, and they're not wasting their time if they don't like the numbers.
And they feel comfortable because you're on the phone with them. Exactly. Like, you're guiding them through the process. Yeah. So they have the mortgage guy and the agent with them.
Exactly.
Right. Oh, it's like a team.
You got a team behind it. Yeah. Buying a house it's a huge financial. Oh, yeah. They have to feel comfortable.
It's the biggest financial thing that you're going to take
for sure.
I mean, that's how I look at us. I mean, we've probably closed how many together, you think?
Shit.
40 or 50, 40 or 50 probably. Yeah. I'd love to go through and we should count that one day. But yeah, I mean,
how long have you been doing that that list?
So just like you guys getting in, trying to figure out like what the fuck am I supposed to do? I got like when I first got in, the only thing was like, hey, you just need to get connected with real estate agents. So I spent a lot of time networking, lunches, just back then people were still going in the office. Not many people go in the office.
What year was this?
May of 2015 started.
Wow. Yeah. You've been doing it a long time, dude.
Yeah, going on 10 Congrats. Years. Yeah. Thanks. And so, but yeah, so that's what I did the first couple of years. And then I realized like the behind the scenes stuff, like I have a team that handled a lot of the behind the scenes stuff for me. So I didn't have to worry about it. But then now it started growing and growing and growing. And now I had to start spending more and more time doing the things that I needed to do. And I'm like,
to keep that team.
Yeah. And what do I need to do? So I got into coaching and that's, and that was 2017,
okay.
2018. That I got into coaching, and that's when we started getting everything structured and coming up with those non-negotiables. And then we just have been fine tuning it every year since. That's so good. as the business continues to grow.
Cool.
So
that's good stuff. Yeah. I think I saw a video too, Zach, of you being like, take 100 calls or do 100 calls in the beginning of the day.
Yeah. Like, so I would do, well, I would do a circle dialer and I still have it. I just don't get on there too much. My VA does a lot of that for me, and my agent that I'm training underneath me right now, he gets on there too, but it's a, I don't know if you've heard of it. Like it's called Mojo, and there's a bunch of different programs.
We use Follow Up Boss. I don't know if you know Follow Up Boss. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I don't. Yeah. It's, I think there's a couple of them out there, Mojo. And I think another one's Red X, but basically like it's a program where you can pull up on a map. You basically draw a circle or draw whatever on the map, and it'll pull up all the phone numbers associated with those addresses. Really? And then you can have a 3-line dialer, and it'll dial three numbers all at once. And you only talk to the people who pick
up. If they pick up.
If they pick up. Otherwise, if it just goes to voicemail, it just skips over
them.
Yep. And so
I should
you
look
can,
into that. Yeah.
So you can rip, I mean, dude, you can rip 100 dials in anywhere from 45
But these
minutes.
Are completely cold. These are just
cold
you.
As
yeah.
fuck, bro. But okay. it's also, but like what I like about it is you can target it, like you can target a specific neighborhood. So it's like, okay, well, I would like to get more listings in the $350,000 to $500,000, you know, $500,000 price point. Okay, well, here's a nice neighborhood in, you know, in Oakville or something. You know, and okay, I draw this up, and basically what are you
saying to them?
So this is my script, and so you never just want to call and say like, hey, you want
to sell your house?
Because most people,
good morning,
you
want to sell your
house? Exactly.
Like,
no,
what the fuck?
No. I always call and like I want to call and say like and be like giving them something. So like what I'll do is how I kind of pick the neighborhoods is I'll pull up
probably a past sale.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. I pull up something that just closed down the street, and I usually look for something that's like a good story.
Yeah,
like ooh. Hey, this is
they
perfect.
Bought it for X, they sold it for Y.
Well, no, not even that. I want to say, hey, this house down the street just listed for $300,000, but it went for $40,000 over the list.
Yeah,
price.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes.
It's a really like,
yeah,
wow.
So it's like man, it's a hot neighborhood. You know, it's like, and so, and another thing you can do is like pre-record voicemails. So I'll call and like, I'll like, before I start calling, I can record a voicemail of like, hey, this is Zach with Keller Williams. I just, just want to let you know, I just sold a house down the street at 123 Main Street. Just was letting the neighborhood know about the sale, and I thought you guys would want to hear the good news. The house was listed at $300,000, ended up selling for $350,000 in 30 days. You know, if you or any of your neighbors know of anybody in the neighborhood looking to sell, this is a great time to do it. Please give me a call if you have any questions or if you want to, you know, a property analysis.
He's got
on
it
yours,
down. You got
know,
it down.
And I just would, you know, and rip that. And because, I mean, if you're calling to let someone know that information,
it's, yeah, it's not
people
like,
still hang up on you.
Yeah,
you
I'm
know?
Sure.
But it's like, you're calling to tell them, hey, like, man, I got some good news to tell you. Like,
yeah, your house is, you got some equity.
Yeah,
yeah
for sure.
You might want to cash out.
Yeah, 100%. So I've.
The
I've,
issue, though, with it becomes like, this is down the line, but like, then they cash out, but then where do they go? And then that's the other.
Well, that's the problem right now.
Yeah, because I've been in situations like that, too. Like, I did an open house in this area, like the Rittner School District.
Mm-hmm.
And I did the open house. Like the neighbors came. I started talking to them, and they were older and they're wanting to downsize. But we started talking. They're like, yeah, this is listed, you know, for, I think it was like it was 185, went for like 220.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like shocked because, you know, they had lived there for, you know, 30, 40
years.
Yeah,
grand.
They probably bought it. But I'm thinking like, okay. And then we had that conversation. It's like, where does somebody like that go? Because the market
they need
is
to sell to buy.
Yeah,
that's the problem.
Yeah.
You know,
so it's like this.
Well, and
but you never know people's situation. They may move out of state. They may go to assisted living or something.
Well, that's another thing that I'm, you know, I do the midterm rentals, and it's kind of something why I want to get some more of them so that I can like, all right, well, you need to sell your house.
Smart.
I can throw you into my,
in it,
I can throw you in there for
a temporary
month or two,
holding.
You know, and it's a furnished
that's
rental.
Smart.
You just got to go get a, you know, a storage unit for all your stuff. go store all your stuff. You can live here for, you know, 2-3 yeah. months. And then I've got this furnished place. It's in a nice area. It's a nice house.
That stuff like that sets you apart as an agent. Like well, our broker.
That was your Airbnb. I know it's going to.
Yeah.
Yes. You want to say some baller ass yeah. lawn. Like my broker used to have a moving truck that he would offer. Yeah. I'm like, damn, that's so like cool. having these different, mm-hmm. or he does like a shredding service. I don't know. That's thing yeah. too. Yeah. I didn't know any of this stuff going into real estate. I thought it was just like, here's the house. Here's the contract. Congratulations. Yeah. It's a whole,
ecosystem of like, create like a thing I'd like to do and
service.
Like, and, I mean, I need to get back to doing this. Cause I've been working with a lot more sellers recently than buyers, but I'll, you know, show up, you know, with a bunch of moving boxes one day and like, you know, little stuff like that you can do to kind of like set you apart. Like, hey, moving sucks. Here's one less thing to worry about. You know, just shit like that. Yeah. Little easy stuff that you can do that just kind of sets you apart. It's like, okay, I go spend $50 at Home Depot on, you know, get them, you know, 40, like a bunch of cardboard boxes that they got to, you know, put together.
Cool little trick if you're dealing with somebody that has kids. The Berenstain Bears were a moving book. It's awesome.
It's a book about moving.
About moving. Yeah. Oh, okay.
Now I guess you could find that because the Bluey's become a big thing. I think they've
Bluey's got one.
I think they might have. Yeah. Well, they Bluey's just
took over. It's
they
just different. Did, yeah, demogra- just, different yeah. yeah. Generation.
Exactly.
We grew up on Bears.
Yeah. We were. Yeah.
Now it's Bluey.
Yeah. Now it's Bluey.
Yeah. We've tried to get Calvin into Bluey. He doesn't.
No, I'm not a fan.
Not
yet.
Into it, dude. He wants nothing but trains and trucks, dude.
Yeah. Give him a little bit.
Just things that roll. Things that roll in or loud. That's all he wants. But hey, one other thing I wanted to get into. So I know you did kind of a stint where you were working in restaurants and stuff like that. So I kind of wanted to,
we can talk
that's
about
a,
that.
That's you know, I spent about 10 years in the restaurant industry.
That's
so
funny about the similarity. So yeah, I had the gym I was a personal trainer for, let's say 10 years from like 22 out of college to about 30. With fitness, obviously nutrition is so important. I wanted to learn how to cook besides just making some bullshit chicken and some rice. Right. So I'd always been interested in food. I liked to show people that you could have food taste really good and be good for you with some simple tricks in here. So when I moved back to Brooklyn, after I shut down my gym, just kind of figure things out and kind of like find my next thing. I was in New York City, which has all these restaurants, and I loved restaurants. I loved food. I loved, you know, just to eat and go out or whatever. And at the time I was actually reading Anthony Bourdain's book. Mm-hmm. And I love that aspect of like, it just seemed like a deeper understanding of.
Dude, he really romanticized
it. He really did. And the books were incredible. The show was incredible. And I just loved his way of thinking.
Right?
He trains jiu-jitsu. Yeah. I know. Actually, I have his AB as a chef knife, but AB. When I went to culinary school, I got that tattoo just to remind me of like just his way of thinking and just his anyway, I can go off on a whole thing with him. But I remember reading one of his books. He went to CIA, which was the Culinary Institute of America, which is like the top culinary school in America, or let's say. In New York. So I was like, oh, well, shit, I'm in New York.
Yeah, I'm here.
I don't know what I'm gonna do with myself. I love food. He had kind of romanticized it. Let me try culinary or let me try restaurants. I had the only experience I had in like, let's say service industry was nightclubs.
Okay.
I used to work as like a door person, a bouncer, and like a makeshift bar back with filling in, like, you know, when I was younger. So I ended up going to culinary school, but that was in 2020 and I got accepted. It was a beautiful school. It was like this campus. They had restaurants on the campus. It was amazing. And I was having such a good time. I got elected to be like the kitchen leader, even though I had no experience. I'm like, this is amazing. And then COVID hit. Mm. So COVID sent us all home. And, you know, like in the beginning, it was 2 weeks. Then it was a month. Then it was 2 months. So I was back in Brooklyn trying to wait it out for culinary school. Because mind you, I started in January and then COVID hit in March, if you remember. Yep. So there was only 3 months. But I was loving it. And went back home to Brooklyn and they tried to do like an online pseudo, but like culinary, that's
you
cooking is the worst.
You have to be
in the kitchen. We cannot do PowerPoints when it comes to cooking. Right. Sorry. So yeah. I was like, I'm not going to pay tuition and I could just do YouTube if we're going to do this.
Right.
This route.
How we're doing it.
Yeah. So I ended up meeting a guy in culinary school that we hit it off. We were in the same class together. I moved back to St. Louis. And I was like, hey, bro, we should do something.
He was from St. Louis?
No, he was from Seattle, but St. Louis was open. You know, New York was a fucking war zone at the time. So we both, he ended up going back home to Seattle. I went back to St. Louis. I was like, bro, we should do something in St. Louis together. It's open. I got my loft. Mm. I was on a forbearance. So I was living rent-free. Everything was shut down, except for they didn't give a fuck in Missouri.
Right.
So we moved in together and we just became like roommates and we did catering stuff. And then I started working in a restaurant. So the first restaurant jobs I worked at were in St. Louis when I moved back post COVID. And I worked in like Guido's on the Hill.
Yeah.
I worked at a fancy restaurant in Clayton. I worked at like a sandwich shop. We did some catering with my buddy from culinary school. So I probably had about, I mean, all in from like the end of 2020 to probably 2020 recently. I mean, I was working at Ballpark Village as a manager, and then I worked at Sunday Best, which is the old Juniper, as a manager. So I basically did everything in restaurants from back of house, front of house, and then management.
Okay.
In my 2-3 year of that run, I will say, I mean, you could speak to it too. It's hard. It's a lot of hours.
A lot of
fun. Like I met great people, great laughs. It's so laid back. But, you know, working 12, 13, 14 hours, your income, I mean, it's similar to real estate. It's kind of, it can change.
It can vary. You can have really good nights.
Correct.
You can have, you know, but you can have horrible nights.
Yeah.
You can deal with some bullshit. And the hard part, you know, because most recently I was kind of in a GM role. You know, that was my last role in a restaurant.
That was at the barbecue spot?
Yeah. And I loved it. And I put my heart and soul into it. But boy, it's so difficult because you've just got, you know, kind of these, you have to make people like a believer, and they have to, it's hard to make someone care about it as much as you do. And, you know, you get,
you're talking about like employees and everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Employees is where it's difficult. I mean, customers can be difficult too, but like the hardest part for me, was finding good quality people that can follow the directions. Like I told you to make the sandwich this way. We put this many pieces of cheese on it. We put, you know, 3 slices of tomato, not 2. You know, like it's like there's all these different things.
And that's like basic. Like I shouldn't have to tell people, but unfortunately, restaurants can sometimes have a low barrier to entry. And
that's exactly it. It's
really, it's kind of like a side job. Like, oh, I guess I'll go work at a restaurant.
It's no big deal.
It's like, no, exactly.
I can go. And they'll drop you for another dollar an hour down the street.
Yeah.
You know, like, oh man, wait. So I'm making $15 an hour and I can go there and make 16.
Fuck off. There's no loyalty.
Yeah. Exactly.
Which I mean, in restaurants in general are hard. From the top down, from the owner and the margins on food.
Well, your margin, that's
it's razor thin. And then you're dealing with employees. I mean, the shit I would deal with at Ballpark Village, from the employee side, well, also both sides, the customer side.
Drunk people at Ballpark Village.
Yeah.
That's not something I ever really dealt with a ton.
And the expectations and the volume. Because, you know, when you're at Ballpark Village, we're getting hit from like 0 to 200 in a matter of seconds as the game lets out or goes in. So it was definitely like an experience of, I don't know, like stress management and dealing with customer relationships and managing schedule. It was just a lot. But I ended up leaving the restaurant industry when the restaurant I was at shut down most recently. And I had my license. And I was like, you know what? This is the time. Like, I've already been kind of beaten up by the industry. I kind of got with Ballpark Village. They just kept extending my hours and I was on salary. So, you know, once they kind of bring you in, they're like, oh, well, now we're going to open the bar till 1 a.m. I was like, well, I signed on and it was 10 a.m. or 10 p.m., not 1 a.m.
Yeah.
And then when I moved to that other restaurant and they shut down after 10 years and you've seen a lot of restaurants close their doors. I'm just like, this is not for me. So then I got into real estate and that was full time. Like I said, 4 months ago.
Have you guys seen that show, The Bear?
Dude, I love it.
That
we're all caught up. That's why I love it because it's like it's such a good. Yeah, we just finished it like couple days ago.
Is that the one with the lip
from
Shameless?
Shameless, dude, it's so good because it is like when they're yelling at each other like dude. I'm like, Gina, this was my life for like 10 years.
My girlfriend's like, all they do is scream and yell and curse at each other. I'm like, that's kind of how it is.
Yeah, like it's pretty true. Like it is. Yeah. It's like, I mean,
it's interesting to see The Bear now though, because like obviously when you work in it, you see, and I don't know, I'm only on episode 3, like how that's going to work with the new menu changing every day and like his standards are so high, and like that is great in like a idealistic almost like dreamer setting, but like in reality to find that work and to find that, like,
well, just wait, they do a pretty good job.
It's good. Yeah, but like, I mean, when I worked at Sugar Fire, you know, we did two new menu specials every single day.
Completely new
menu items.
Never. I mean, I'm sure
would come back, but I mean, the whole thought was, is, and this is what's difficult about barbecue specifically, is, you know, okay, if you're going to a Sugar Fire and you want to get brisket or you want to get ribs or something, you want the brisket that was cooked that was pulled off that morning.
I want
to
smoke it hot.
Because it, you know, the night, that's the thing that you don't think about with barbecue is the day before
you're cooking for the next day
and you're totally gambling on, okay, well,
you're betting on how much you're going to sell.
Exactly. And you have no idea. So
damn,
like,
I never thought about
it. So like, you know, there's a day that goes by and like, dude, we have fucking 7 briskets left over.
What do we do with them? We got to repurpose it.
Yeah, we got to repurpose it. And it's like, because we still have to cook fresh brisket for tomorrow. So okay, tomorrow's a brisket grilled cheese or a...
So you shred it up or put it in something.
Cut it into whatever or, you know, you cut it up, turn it into sides and you do all these things. And it's like, it can get like... And we tried to do the similar thing at the barbecue place I was at. But like, you know, we had these like very high level chefs working at Sugar Fire. Like,
I mean, the food's fine. I mean, the food's incredible. Really, it is
you know, like a lot of, at least the ones that I worked at, they all came from the same restaurant. Like, okay. And which is closed now, is Caldwell's was the name of the restaurant. Okay. And it was really good. I went there once before they closed, and but they were all trained under the same chef, and you know he sounds like a very similar situation to like the bear
guy,
you know, like very like
this is how we're gonna do it. You better fucking fine listen.
Dining, like you know the delicate little plates and stuff like that. Like that's what they were doing, and so like they kind of took that and
put it towards casual,
to like casual barbecue, fast casual, which was cool. And it was just such a fun place to work at because I mean they were. So busy. I mean, it was by far the busiest restaurant I'd ever worked in. I mean, they were doing like $100,000 a week.
It's just sales, nonstop. You go by any single one of them, especially around lunchtime.
Yeah.
And that line is out the door.
But yeah, I mean, and your goal is to sell out every day. Like right. you want, like if we close at 9 p.m. and I'm selling out of everything by like 8 p.m., that's a like
day.
A perfect day.
Good day.
You know, yeah. Like if the last minute people that are showing up like right before closing, it's like, hey, yeah, we got turkey and sausages.
That's
you know?
What restaurants is so hard because it's so in flux. Mm-hmm. Like you don't know the weather's dependent, the mm-hmm. events that are going around, people's tastes start to change. Like fine dining's kind of fallen by the wayside. Yeah, now it's more fast casual.
And your inventory expires.
You're on the clock. The clock is ticking on your food costs. And like, yeah, it's amazing when a restaurant does be successful and then also scale it. Mm-hmm. Like that's crazy. You're like a diamond in the rough.
Right. But and even like barbecue, man, you're like you said it before, your margins are so slim. Like mm-hmm. it's like it's I mean, from my understanding, like a you know, making a like 10-20% profit mm-hmm. is like
that's
good.
That's the considered
goal.
Good.
Yeah, that's the goal. And like
I think the way you make labor, it is volume.
All these things.
Yeah.
Have you guys been to Gordon Ramsay's new kitchen?
No, I haven't yet.
I haven't heard the best.
I've heard really? I heard someone say something negative about it, but you know.
Huh.
I don't know.
It's a nice spot. Like it's a nice spot. Yeah. They do a DJ thing there now too. That whole Four Seasons. Yeah. It used to be the old cider or center house.
Right. Yeah. The center house. Yeah. I never went there though.
I will. St. Louis is a good restaurant scene.
Yeah.
Like
it is.
For what it is. There's some lot of hidden gems and they're affordable mm-hmm. and you can get in and the a lot of different cuisines and there's a lot of good chefs here. Mm-hmm. So
well, we were working with one of them. I mean, he's got his stuff on hold, but he owns Lucky Accomplice. And
oh, that's like one of my favorite. Dude, Logan. That's been, you been there?
Logan, he trains at Watson's.
Does he really?
Yeah, he's a blue belt.
Oh,
I'm
sure
I've
seen
him. He opened up Press. He has a bunch of tattoos. Skinny, bald dude, tall.
Okay. I know Press. That's right next door.
Yeah, right next door. Yeah. Those are both his places.
Those are his, yeah.
I know there's, okay, that makes sense now because one of the guys in my fundamentals class is a chef at Press.
Yeah, blue belt.
No, in my basics class, a white belt.
Okay.
But he works at Press. So I bet Logan probably brought him in.
That makes
sense.
He's like,
hey. But yeah, Lucky Accomplice is really, that's right down the street from me. So that place is fire.
Yeah.
I want to go to Press. It's pizza, right?
It's like pressed pizzas.
Yeah.
He said it was like an idea that they were just like messing around with one day at Lucky Accomplice. And mm-hmm. they're like, man, this is good. And
yeah. Lucky Accomplice has this like toasted ravioli that's just one giant
toaster
ravioli. It's fire.
Yeah, dude. He's a good dude. We want to get him on the podcast too.
Yeah, for sure.
He's just an interesting, like he's like cooked all over the world. Like he's kind of like a world renowned.
Most chefs at that level are really interesting people.
People like know. Yeah,
they've traveled. They're super smart. They're very creative. They're very like, yeah.
Yeah. It's like a certain type.
It's a type of person. Yeah,
for sure. Yeah, man. So you've gotten into jiu-jitsu over the last couple months.
I want to hear how that's been. I think I was the first exposed to it, like you, Joe Rogan. Mm-hmm. That was years ago. Also, my buddy Adam, who owns Impose Will. So I had been on his podcast a number. He had kind of talked about it, but this wasn't like in the right, I guess, like state in terms of like my own fitness and what I really thought of it. And then my buddy Robbie. Mm-hmm. So I just kept getting more like people coming into my life that had either had done it or had talked about it. And then sure enough, I was at Omen and we were sitting at the bar And I had no idea that you were a coach there. And I was like, you know what? Shit, it's right down the street. I have no excuse at this point. I know the coach. Part of it was my own, honestly, like my own anxiety about it.
Exactly. Dude, because
I didn't know.
It's a scary thing.
Fuck yeah, dude. And I'm in shape. I'm tattooed. But you walk in, it's like you're in the Gladiator Dome. Right. I'll never forget walking in and seeing these guys just like go at it, sweating. And I'm like, what the fuck is this?
Yeah, and they do that every day.
Yeah. Yeah. And my first class ever, dude. Like it was like a pass. It was just weird, uncomfortable position. Anyway, but luckily I knew you. And that was back in September of last year. And I would say since January, I've been pretty consistent. Twice a week, at least three times sometimes.
Yeah, dude, it's just so fun, man.
It's like nothing I've ever experienced in terms of like, I thought about the other day, like why have I stuck with it this long? Like, you know, because I feel like I'm kind of over the hump where like, okay, I'm past 6 months. I'm past like the honeymoon where like it's new and it's fun and you're like all excited and you're like trying the new moves. That now becomes like the reality of like, oh, this shit's actually fucking hard. Oh, and I see why most people quit at this point.
For sure. I think the failure rate or the quit rate, it's gotta be
90%.
I think I saw something once that was like, it was like 90 or 95% of people that put a white belt on for the first time, don't make it to blue.
Yeah. And I get it. It takes a long time. It can be expensive, injuries, life, you know, just it gets too hard. So I get all that. But there is a certain element of like, why am I here? And, you know, getting up super, I go to the 6 a.m. Mm-hmm. So getting up super early, the people I've met, the physical feeling, like my body feels best. I mean, I have some pain competition, but at the same time, like I just have a more connected, I don't know if that makes sense.
No, 100%. Like I think there is something to, it's going to sound weird when I say it, but like the physical touch.
Yeah.
Like you get really close to people when you're sweating.
We don't do that in everyday life. No. You meet somebody for the first time in class and you're just like, all right, let's do it. And you just beat the fuck. I mean, not really, but like.
Right. Oh no, you did.
And then you become like friend and you like talk about it.
How'd you get me in?
Yeah.
What was that?
Yeah. I think there's like this idea of like you're helping each other and you're teaching and you're taking it and you're around other guys. I think that's important too. Talk about like masculinity, like being around other guys. That's something that just being around most men and then being that environment, the uniform and the structure and the hierarchy and the investment. There's just all this shit that comes when you start to really look at it. And yeah, dude, I mean, I'm hope I'm in it for the long haul. I'm trying to like take care of my body. I'm also 37 with no wrestling experience. So I had the competition this weekend. I got my fucking ass kicked, which was crazy.
I'm proud of you for signing up.
Yeah, did you do Adam's thing?
I did it on Saturday, first competition. I do pretty well in class, but the competition is next level.
It's a different.
Those guys,
you get like an adrenaline dump. I don't know if you felt it. I've been competing for a long time, and I still get it. You know, you get this like nervous feeling right before you go out there.
There's a next level of like when you're in class and you're rolling with people. There's still like
it doesn't fucking matter.
Yeah,
you know?
And you're like it's your friends. You're not really trying to like go for their neck. When you're in competition, you're going for their fucking neck.
Yeah.
And I felt that. You could feel that energy. I'm like, damn, this is like real. This is not just like, you know, live sparring in class.
It's not someone you know.
You don't really know like their style or like. So the first dude I was able to last, I have good endurance, thankfully. I was able to last the full time, but he just kept scoring on me. Like I could not get, it's so dumb. I look back at the video, like I was stuck in side control, which is like one of the first things we fucking do. I could not figure out.
I was pushing, dumb.
I should have framed and I should have escaped, but. At one point, I was able to get on top of him, but he ended up winning on points. And the second dude, again, like basic shit, but when you're in the arena, all that shit goes out the fucking door. Like I had gone through it and visualized like, okay, if he gets me here, I'm going to do this. I'd gone through it the night before. As soon as I took him down, he got me in an arm bar and just fucking locked it up. And usually I can slip out. But I felt something like, cause I was trying to be my girlfriend's there, her family. Yeah. I'm like, I'm not trying to fucking tap in front of her. Yeah. So I'm like trying to rip that shit out. And he cranked on it. And like, I lost in like 20 seconds.
Yeah.
Fuck. But it was very sobering and humbling.
100%, dude. And well, now you go back and you're like, okay, exactly. Right, now I need to work
now
on
armbar defense. Now I
need to figure out.
Side control and armbar defense because it's so basic. And it's so funny how like I went in, you know, going to class consistently. I was getting out of moves. I was tapping blue belts in class. I'm like, oh, I'm good. I walk in. I'm like, fuck, it's next level.
Right. It is. It's but man, it's just so fun.
It is, yeah. There is something about it.
And like you said it before, is like the people and that do it. I think that's one of the reasons I stick around too. Cause it's like, man, it takes kind of an exceptional person to like take this much punishment. and like stick around.
Yeah.
And like keep showing up.
When I'm in the 6 a.m. class especially, I'm like, people that are getting up at 5:30 in the morning and coming to a jiu-jitsu class and paying and investing in themselves and getting their ass kicked consistently, I'm like, this is a different type of person. And right. This is people I want to be around.
Right.
Even if I'm not like interacting with them, like, but just that, I feel great leaving class in the morning or even just anytime.
You feel like you can conquer the world
for the rest of the day. Like, yeah.
I did the hardest thing I'm going to do.
And most people aren't going to even step foot in that class or they're going to step foot in the class and then quit after like a couple months because they're going to make up some bullshit excuse. So those people that are the blue and the purple belts or even down the line, like, I'm like, damn, they're really in it. And I can respect that.
Yeah, it takes an exceptional person to stick around that.
Or crazy as fuck.
Yeah, for sure. Well, I feel like one thing I've noticed is like, a lot of the people that are like the higher level belts that have stuck around, it's like, I feel like they excel in other areas of their life.
Yeah, you that's know? True. And that's like, a good point.
I mean, that's kind of why we look back on a lot of the past guests we've had on this podcast. It's been a lot of like higher level jiu-jitsu guys.
Look at Uzo.
Like, black belts.
Yeah, they're black belts that have done, that he also does, he's a black belt, but he also does this.
You got to be pretty like, smart as you get up the ranks, I think too. Like it's mental.
It's not a meathead thing.
No, it's definitely not. And you have to be, like you said, like, cognizant of your fit or your weaknesses and kind of be a little bit more of like a student, and that takes a little bit more like ego and humbleness beyond. So it is an interesting person that is more receptive to things, I feel like.
Mm-hmm. No, I totally agree.
I mean, I think humbling yourself as a student is hard enough as an adult.
Yeah.
You know, and I think the thing that, like you said, it's the weirdness of having to go toe to toe with a grown man in a sport where they're trying to either choke you out or joint lock you. I mean, like going with you a week or so ago, like going with you is the exact anxiety I get, because it's especially at Kyle's school. Cause what is Kyle really great at? Pressure passing. It's that feeling of not being able to breathe, having someone literally on
that's
you,
my
throwing
yeah,
their,
that's my
throwing game. Their shoulder right into your neck and clavicle. Like that's, I used to panic a lot more about that. It still sucks. I still fucking hate it.
Mm-hmm.
And my brain still goes to, if I was in the street right now, I'd get killed.
Mm-hmm.
But it's also got to be like, well, you can also take yourself out of that and you can really grow from it. And again, just do minimize the ego, cultivate it. Don't sit there and be like, oh, I'm a bitch for losing.
You're right. Cause there is an element of that when you get tapped or like you get, you feel like, but at the same time, like it does take a little bit like a step back to be like, hey, can you, it's weird for a guy take that direct.
Show me how you did that.
Inherently. Yeah. Like we're like, we don't want to ask for directions. Right. I noticed this as a trainer with especially my male clients, like they just, there's just this like weird, especially when they're older or like they have more shit. It's just like a weird element. But at the same time, I see that a lot in jiu-jitsu. Like you have to be the student. You have to kind of be a little bit more like, hey, can you teach me that? Like, I don't know we don't know everything.
Well, I mean, I think it goes back. I mean, we're afraid to look dumb.
Yeah.
Ask questions and look dumb. But with jiu-jitsu, like if you don't ask these questions, you're going to look even dumber.
Yeah.
Once you're actually, you're going to keep getting fucked up. And you know, I think that's, I like how they have the basics classes, and because it gives you that foundation to move up.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I need to get, once the baseball's over and I can get back into the basics, because I've been going straight, just thrown that.
I went through basics.
Just been getting my ass kicked.
I went through it twice for that reason. Really? Cause like I went through basics. I went through fundamentals. I'm like, this is too much for me. I'm getting my ass kicked. I'm not even understanding it. Like, I don't know what I don't know. I went back through basics again. And that time, like the second pass, I was like, all right, now I got it. And then also I was the Yugi
or
the Ugi.
Yeah.
So I felt like what it felt like to actually like have somebody move well with you.
Like someone who's actually doing it.
Yeah.
Right.
With you and Jason, I was like, okay, this is how it's supposed to feel like. Sometimes with the white belts, like they're just a little bit more spazzy or they don't know how to like sink down. So like, oh, this is how it's supposed to feel. So it was interesting being on that side, rolling with somebody consistently that were demoed on, that knew what the fuck they were doing.
Right. No, and feeling the pressure. Cause that's something that I feel like most people, you know, it takes time to like develop that, like pressure or being able to like
the callus,
like
of
know
it.
Where your weight is, you know, like, I don't know, distributing your weight. I think there's a,
tell you what, rolling with Big Mike, you learn what that pressure, you learn what that pressure feels
he's a
like.
Big boy.
Oh, he's big.
Yeah. He's a big boy.
When do you normally go?
Lately it's been at 10 a.m. on Mondays.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Do you teach that? You teach?
No, I've been going as a student. Monday, okay. And so that's when, now that we've had the second
Who
baby,
teaches that? Trevor?
Trevor. Have you ever gone with Trevor?
I by accident, I didn't roll with him, but like my second or third class ever, I was confused with like the fundamentals and the basics. So I ended up going to a 10 a.m. and Kyle's like, this is like the next level. I'm like, but Trevor was there. He's like, he'll be fine.
Yeah.
It was fine.
Yeah. Trevor's great. I train with him pretty regularly and he kicks the shit out of me every single time.
Just watching him move and how
quick everything and explosive. He does. Is
that's what's
explosive.
So cool. It's an art and a science behind it. Right. It. When you see somebody that knows what they're doing, it's just like cool to see. Like just like flows and it's
Like if you watch two people, I heard that this analogy once. It's like it's not, you know, it's not like a fighting like a car crash.
No,
it's like fighting
it's like a dance.
It's like two. It's like water moving around a rock or something. You know.
Yes.
And if you watch two people that actually know what they're doing, it's like almost like a dance.
Yeah.
Well, there's sometimes where he's showing like what we're supposed to be working on, and he's like doing it so quickly. I'm like mesmerized by like how he's doing. I'm like,
wait,
pay attention to
my
what
right leg. Yeah. My leg.
Yeah. Slow down one and a half times.
Yeah. he's a freak, man.
I think one of the actually something I saw recently that I think is a really great visual to what you just mentioned, Zach, was I don't know how long ago this was. I think it was in the last year, but I saw Bo Nickel and Gordon Ryan go at it in a grappling competition. Mm-hmm. And it's like, Bo Nickel's a savage. Mm-hmm. The dude is a bad motherfucker. But it's like, as a pure wrestler, you go up against Gordon Ryan, and they said like Ryan can't use guard even. He still beat him with a triangle.
Right, he triangled him, yeah.
And it was just like, dude, it's just that next level. And again, I don't have any wrestling experience, but like, I know what it's got like to be taken down by a bunch of former wrestlers when I was in college. So like, you have to like kind of duplicate that aggression. But I mean, aggression in jiu-jitsu does not really get you anywhere. It's knowledge and it's technique and it's the ability to really spare your energy throughout the whole fucking thing.
100%, dude. Because that's the one thing that you notice with like brand new white belts is they like hyperventilate when they're
breathing.
I'm one of those.
They're breathing real heavy. Yeah.
You're just like, dude, slow down,
relax. Still stay.
But you need to like
smile in bad
like
positions.
There's a
like,
dance.
I try to nasal breathe almost as much as I can, you know, until I really start getting.
But to your point, when somebody's on top of you pressuring you, you're like, you start to get like
you
anxiety.
Get panicky.
Yeah.
I try to smile. Like someone told me, they're like, no, they're like, if you can like get yourself out
tricks
of stress,
your body, it tricks your body.
Yeah.
I can see that.
If you're in a stressed out position, especially if someone's got you in mount or a really tough side mount. Smile a little bit. Like, you're going to look like an idiot, but you're probably not going to get his
Kyle's
going to
be like, you're right.
Okay.
You're not going to be smiling in a minute. Fucking Kyle.
Yeah, he's so funny.
Hey, he's hilarious.
Got a lot of...
I will say, the instructors at Watson have been great, too, because they make it informative, but also, like, engaging and fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, Colin does it.
Yeah, Colin's awesome.
They have a good back and forth of, like, it's instructional and practical, but also, like, enjoyable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well,
leisure.
That's, I mean, dude, and it's not all gyms are like that.
So
I don't know if you've.
I've been to one of. I went to when I was in New York City. I went to actually Renzo Gracie.
Henzo.
So him. Yes. I went to his gym in the Upper West Side, and
was Donaher there?
Who?
Donaher.
The blue basement.
It was in the basement.
The blue basement? Was it blue?
It, from what I remember, it was gray. It might have been blue, but
it's like a legendary gym.
So yeah, so there's a crazy story associated with that, but. Basically, there was a guy there that, this is insane. An uncle brought his kid. There was a kid's class. This shows you how New York City is just out of control right now. Uncle brought his kid to the kid's class. One of the kids in the kid's class messed up his nephew a little bit. The uncle, who's like a grown man, threatened the little kid in the locker room with a box cutter in the jiu-jitsu gym. So these are Brazilian. These are like, you know, Renzo Gracie. Like, these are like from Brazil.
Yeah.
And this little, like, you know, uncle slubby dude is threatening a little kid in the locker room. Anyway, they got wind of it. The instructors got in their face. This is all my first class there. I'm like, what the hell is going on? And six NYPD officers show up and arrest this dude in the middle of the class for the adult class. By the time it all like changed over, like the kids class was ending, the adult class was starting. I get on the mats and I see these officers walk in, talk to this uncle dude and arrest him while he's teaching the class. I'm like, this is insane.
Dude, that's
and
crazy.
Yeah, it was. And to all, it's so funny that you would think to do that. Why the first of all, why the fuck would you do that? Second of all the places.
Yeah, we were talking like the other day. Yeah. We were like, man, because we were saying something. I was like, man, can you imagine a worse place to like break into somebody's car or like, you know, try to rob, you know.
Do you know that? How do you say his name?
Henzo. So also in Portuguese, all R's are pronounced
H's.
He got robbed in New York City and he live tweeted it. Did you see that?
Yeah, and he beat the fuck out of
beat the like all the people. You would think you'd see the ears or like to be some indicator.
Most people don't know. Most people don't know cauliflower
of
ear
all
means
the
stay
people
the fuck away.
To fucking go after you. Go after a fucking dude that like from the age of 3 on has
been fighting people. And he's from like one of the, you know,
the family.
The
family
started it. Yeah.
That was so crazy. And he beat the fuck. He like drove her in his car and like found him and beat the fuck out of him.
Well, even like in the community, like once you're someone who is so adept, like remember back like a couple years ago, whenever Andre Galvao walked up on Gordon Ryan and he tried talking shit. And he was like,
Yeah, I just slapped him. Yeah.
Twice.
Yeah.
He goes, I slapped you in the face and I called you a bitch and then I bitch slapped you again. What the fuck are you going to do? There's levels to this shit, dude.
Right. Yeah, well, there's the reactionary. We're just like, okay.
And he didn't do anything
to it. Yeah.
Dude,
yeah.
I remember John Donahue standing there in his fucking New Balance. It's just like,
yeah. His white, like, just do monarchs.
It. I'm waiting for you.
Yeah. Well, that dude just wears, a rash guard everywhere.
He's fucking great, though.
Yeah, he's like a cartoon character.
I would hate to get shit talked by John Donahue.
That's a bald dude.
Yeah,
that's in every like BJJ Fanatics video.
Yeah, 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 yeah. He's like, you know,
he's like
the best coach.
Yeah. Gordon Ryan, GSP.
He coached Gordon Ryan, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's So yeah, but what I was saying is like not all jiu-jitsu gyms.
To your
are
point,
like,
yeah. So their gym was like more traditional. Mm-hmm, they had like a warm up.
Bow.
Yeah,
and
you
know,
I will say I did like they were big into like the not that Watson doesn't do this, but like they would do like this line where they. Everybody talked to each other and like introduced each other to each, like the new person. There was just like this weird hierarchy thing, but the moves were different. Yes. Yes. Yeah. That's what it was. But the moves didn't have a sequence. Kyle has it more of like, I guess from his teaching background, a block sequence that builds. This one was just like, they were throwing out random moves. Like, okay, we're going to do this like weird choke. And then we're going to do this like
pass.
And then we're just going to live spar.
Yeah, it just doesn't connect.
There was like, no like, okay, if you were here last week, this is what we're going to work on this week, and this is the connection between it.
Yeah, so this is the pass that gets you to mount, and then from mount, we're doing this attack.
And I was surprised because of the history of that gym, or just that family. I mean, it's just to each their own. It's just different style. But I tend to, there's things I liked about each, but I tend to like that style of like connectivity because it makes more sense to me because I don't have that wrestling background of being like, what the fuck am I going to do with this like random, you know, pass that I learned?
Right. Well, there's a lot of gyms out there that are super traditional. Like you have to bow to the instructor. You have to, you have to bow before you touch the mat or before you step on the mat. You have to, we line up every time we do these.
That's what this
crazy
was.
Warm-ups where we spend 30 minutes. Warming
they do the
up,
shrimp down the
shrimp down the mat. That's one of my favorite things is that Kyle doesn't do any of the
warm-ups. We just go right into it.
Well, it's like he says, hey, if you want to warm up, get there early.
Right.
You know, cause it's like, I'm here to give you an hour worth of jiu-jitsu.
And our stuff is so dense. Cause we don't have all that, not filler, but like fluff.
It's kind of like fluff.
It's an hour of like, we're drilling, learning and sparring.
Do strength and conditioning on your own time.
Yeah. Which I do. I mean, we all do that. So we don't need that. I'm not there to warm up. I'm there to actually learn.
Yeah, I like to get there 15 minutes before and try to break a little sweat, do some stretching, bullshit with my buddies on the mat, and then we get to it.
For us, Zahabi was even like, dude, if you really want to get your strength and conditioning done, like do it right after class. He goes, you're tired, you're winded. That's the perfect time for you to work on all those little details that you're not going to be doing on the mat. So you want to do some kettlebell swings, do it right after class. You want to go on a run, do it right after class. Don't sit there and make it this thing where you put it off and you don't do it and you ignore it and then your strength condition goes down the tube.
Yeah, that's a good point because I think you can get unbalanced too because when you start to get into jiu-jitsu, you're like, oh, I'm only going to do jiu-jitsu. But I'm like, well, I'm only good at jiu-jitsu because of what I've done in the past. I need to keep that shit up. I can't just like throw it by the wayside and be like, oh, I'm only going to do jiu-jitsu. Fuck all the strength conditioning, the mobility, the running.
Dude, that was me, man. I mean, when I first started jiu-jitsu, I was like, all right, well, I'm just doing this 6 days a week.
Yeah.
You know, and I like, that's all I was doing for like a year. And then I was like, and then I looked in the mirror one day, I was like, man, I used to kind of like be a lot more muscular than I am. And then I started like lifting again. And then, and then a couple of years later I got into CrossFit and cause I've noticed that there's a lot of parallel, a lot of people that do a lot of guys that do jiu-jitsu also do CrossFit.
Explosiveness.
It's just kind of like a similar, kind of,
it's the group dynamic. It's the functionality of it. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I love it. I think
that's helped me with jiu-jitsu is doing the CrossFit.
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, well, it's the cardio. I mean, it definitely helped. I think it helped. It simulates. I mean, nothing's going to simulate doing jiu-jitsu like doing jiu-jitsu.
No, I was
like,
fucking dead yesterday.
Yeah. Dude, I'm the lowest I've ever, since high school. I'm 185 pounds. I was for most of my life, I was like 200. I'm 185. And only thing that's changed is jiu-jitsu.
Really?
Only twice, three times a week. I've lost, probably close to 20 pounds. And I've never, like, I've always kind of had this plateau of hitting like 195, 200, 185. I thought the scale was broken. I'm like, this is not the right scale.
Crazy.
But yeah.
Yeah. I don't think I ever saw my abs before I started doing jiu-jitsu.
Same.
Like I really didn't. I mean, I spent years working out.
You know, it's funny because, the classes, it's an hour, but like the only live rounds were really going at it, like 20 minutes. Yeah. But that 20 minutes, you're gassed.
It's a 20 minutes. I mean,
100%. Everything's turned on. You're like trying to. So yeah, it's a crazy workout in a very condensed amount of time.
So I know, I remember seeing some like posts a while because you're not on Instagram, right?
No.
Yeah, I remember seeing some posts a while back that were like you when you were like younger and just fucking
I was yoked.
You were yoked, bro.
So a little backstory on that. I grew up in New York. Jersey Shore is a real thing. Everybody is over 200 pounds in New York or Jersey. Getting into nightclubs, having that strength and conditioning, you know, a little bit of an athlete, but always into the gym. And I don't know if it's my personality or I was good at it. So, when you're good at something, you continue with it. And as I had my personal training business, I was like, the better shape I'm in, the more clients I'm going to get. And I
took it, look the part. Yeah.
I took it to the most extreme, like I do with most things, the most extreme level.
Hence the tattoos.
Yeah, no, seriously, it falls into that. I'm not going to just get one tattoo. I'm going to get all the fucking tattoos. I'm not going to just be jacked. I'm going to be fucking super jacked. So I ended up getting up to like 200 and probably 30, 40 pounds. I was like 20, but just 400 pound with 405 on bench press, like 500 pound deadlift. I was just lifting so heavy, but I was also using all types of shit, which I can talk about.
Oh, yeah, let's hear about it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I was all the above. Started the first cycle when I was probably 22, 23, test, and then went to DECA, did everything, Winstrol, all the above. And it's funny how when I start talking about it, people don't realize most people in the fitness industry are on stuff. Maybe even jiu-jitsu.
Jiu-jitsu is the dirtiest sport of all time.
Really?
Yes. There's no testing.
Okay. That makes sense. Because I see some of these guys, there's no fucking way they're getting this way from jiu-jitsu. Yes. There's no way.
Like Gordon Ryan is very open about his steroid use.
I think I saw a picture of him when he came off and he looked like, thing.
He's got like a really bad stomach condition.
Or something going on.
Yeah, he's got something with his stomach and I don't exactly know the.
So yeah, I did steroids for like it's very common, for 5 years from like 22 to 27. And I was like, what the fuck am I doing?
When you're in New York or when you were here?
It was when I was here. I started in New York because I was around it. I started working out when I was 13, but I started really using, let's say when I was 22, 23. So there was only a couple years in New York and then I moved here. And then I joined Powerhouse Gym.
Okay. Yeah. Which over there off Boston, right?
Yes. Yeah, off of Shrewsbury.
Yeah.
And that gym was like a very meat-heady gym.
Oh, yeah. I remember.
So I
went in there like once or twice.
It was the
buddy of mine had a membership. It was cool.
It was a great. Remember how big it was?
Yeah,
it
just kept huge. Going. It's like an Aldi or something.
Yeah.
Now.
It's an Aldi's now. So I started using there and blew up. And like my body just responded so well. But then as you get older and you mature, you're like, what the fuck am I doing? Mm-hmm. I'm not at the club trying to pick up girls anymore. I'm 27 years old. So I need to figure out why I'm doing this. So I just stopped cold turkey.
And really?
Yeah.
Have you noticed any?
There was a slight dip. I mean, obviously strength is not there. Luckily, I kind of sort of like went unscathed. Like I got my testosterone checked. It was fine.
Like you haven't had any endocrine issues?
No issues. Thank God. But I just ended up stopping and had a little bit of a lull. And there's times mentally where like, okay, I'm not as strong. I'm not as big. Or like I used to wear double X shirts, but that's all dumb shit. And
no, dude,
I feel better, look better. And I know that this is sustainable.
Yeah. I mean, that was like, I always wanted to be like, just jacked, everybody does. But then like once I've realized
superhero.
Yeah. Once you, and I think jiu-jitsu was like a real like eye opening thing for me.
You don't have to be,
have to be. Cause it's like, that's the most like you can, there's some guys, I'm sure you've experienced it. Some guys that look like the most unassuming dudes, but then they grab a hold of you and you're like, what the fuck?
Just
is
feels
this?
Like, oh
yeah. What are you?
And I think kind of like that little guy that was there yesterday.
It's funny you say that. Cause I feel like jiu-jitsu has more of a subtle, like quiet confidence that you end up as you go through your journey. Whereas like, when you're jacked, it's kind of like a bam
in your face.
It's not as like true. It's not true.
No.
Really?
No,
because
not,
I think if
like
you took most of those guys in the gym, they get taken down in a fight or in a jiu-jitsu where like, if you're training true martial arts, you should be able to hold your own, which shit does go down.
Right.
If you're in the gym and you're lifting heavy, you may look like you can hold your own, but you're going to get your ass fucking handed.
100%. Because it's like, you're good at picking stuff up. You're not good at fighting. Fighting's like a sport. People need to think of fighting as a sport.
Yeah. And that was the interesting about jiu-jitsu versus lifting even like in the gym. It's so, like linear versus jiu-jitsu is way more dynamic.
Oh, yeah.
And you have to move your body in ways that you're probably not used to.
Yeah, you're not like,
this is easy.
Yeah, even like you thinking about pulling your arm out of an arm bar.
Yeah.
Like what, I guess that's like a row.
That's a row, but even then it's not so, like I feel like even in gyms, it's more strict and controlled. Yeah. this is more explosive and just like whatever you can figure out.
Mm-hmm. Right? You're moving your wrist around. You're doing all these things.
Where you don't normally in the gym.
And I have a holding a dumbbell.
You're locked up.
Yeah, you're not having anything stopping you from moving. Like you're just pulling the weight.
I've had to retrain myself to be more, I would say, like loose and relaxed because I went from such a background of like tensing, like bridging and like bracing. Versus this is like controlled and breathing.
There's
and
times
like,
to be rigid. Yes, there's times to be loose.
And so I've had to kind of retrain myself and to be more just like loose and relaxed. So yeah.
Man, it's just.
But yeah, steroids was quite the
adventure, huh?
I mean, I look back. I think I looked old. It's so crazy. I'm 37. I think I looked older then because it just changed.
Dude, yeah. Your I remember face. Seeing like one picture of you. I want to say like I feel like you're in like a red tank top and you're just.
I was joked. Yeah, I was joked, dude. We should put it in the show.
Yeah, if you can find the picture, I'll have
I'll send it to you.
Yeah, send it to me. I'll have Murph throw it on the screen.
Every so often, it'll show up in my memories.
Yeah.
I'm like, what the? This is like the same person. Yeah.
I was like, well, dude, like I said, you feel like you've lived a couple of lives.
That I think even in before we talked, I like talked about like, you know, sometimes. People have their own paths and I don't have a traditional path, like coming from New York City, just different experiences, different environments, my upbringing. I've kind of meandered through things and, you know, to each their own. And I'm grateful for those experiences because I have met and done a lot of cool things along the way. I was on a reality show at one point.
Oh, really?
Yeah. What show was that?
Yeah, it was a dating show back in 2021.
Next?
When I was single. No. Is that the MTV one? Yeah. Yeah. The bus?
Yeah,
we were walked off like, nope.
No, yeah, we were talking about that one.
Humiliation, bro. So like, that guy's in therapy for like 20 years.
Yeah, I just stepped off the bus.
I stepped off the shit. No, so I thought it was when I had Instagram. They found me on Instagram. At the time, I had a big following because of First Form, and every time First Form would shout me out back in the day, I'd get like 1,000 followers. This is like early 2017. It was crazy, dude. Like thousands of followers every day. Every time they put me in a video that I was tagged in. So anyway, I had a big following. I was still posting, but like nothing. I wasn't really doing anything other than like cooking and culinary shit. So they found me, it was Discovery Channel and it was a dating show and it was going to be either, what's the other one they do? Naked and Afraid. Uh-huh. That was the original. And they said, we also have a dating show. So I was single. So I was like, I don't want to go on Naked and Afraid. I probably would die. I'm not like outdoorsy like that. So let me try the dating show. So I thought it was a scam, but sure enough, I called them back. It was an LA number. We talked for a while. I filled out an application. I sat down with Discovery. This was all during COVID, so it was all virtual. So I sat down with like a panel of Discovery producers and they drilled me for like an hour and a half on questions, lifestyle, who I was, social media stuff. Mm. I had to take a 300 question psych evaluation with a therapist. It took like five, make sure I wasn't going to like snap on the show and like fucking go crazy. Full blood pan. Like they really went, you know, make sure you were legit. And sure enough, I got selected and they flew me to Colombia, the country.
Huh.
For a month in 2021, 16 contestants, dating show on a like a reservation right by Pablo Escobar. Like this is actually a funny side note. This place that we were in, they have a hippo problem because of Escobar.
Really?
When he had
because he loved the hippos.
He had his own because he's crazy and has all this money. He imported animals for his zoo, his private zoo. Apparently, hippos like got out, and this whole little township in Colombia has a wild hippo problem where they're super fucking aggressive, and they go after people, and they have to like put them down anyway. So we were in that same area, so like we drove by his old like ranch, and it has like the plane that it's insane. So flew in, whatever, was there for a month. I ended up making it to the end. You can watch it.
Yeah,
I sent the girl. What's it called? Oh yeah, it's called Love in the Jungle.
Love in the Jungle,
and it's so crazy because it was Discovery Channel, so they wanted to make it more like educational, but it was a dating show, so like they're trying to basically I don't know what the fuck they were trying to do. So everybody was assigned an animal based on their personality type, and for the first four episodes, you weren't allowed to talk. You could only like go off of people's energy. Only if you won a challenge, on the challenge, you could talk to a girl. So in the house, you could not talk for the first four episodes. It was all about like mannerisms and, you know, attraction by the eyes. And like, it was fucking weird. But I understand what they were trying to do. They were trying to take away like the facade of like, you know, the small talk and the dating apps, like truly somebody's energy. Like if you see a girl or whatever, and you're like, into or like what makes the attraction there from a primal level that is not like, you know, just the way we communicate, which is through our words. So yeah, they assigned us an animal and then we'd have these challenges. And then if you won the challenge, you had a date that the producers would set up and you could talk on the date. But when you're in the house for the first four episodes, you couldn't talk. Huh. And then eventually they took that restriction off. And then they would eliminate as you went on. And then I made it to the final three. There was like a question game and then we got out in the question game.
Damn.
So yeah, crazy. It was crazy. Yeah. So that's another like side tangent, little like side quest that I did when I was, because it was during COVID. And I wasn't going out. I wasn't doing shit. I was like working in restaurants so I could take the time off. And I was like, you know what? This is an opportunity where like I could be on TV and kind of see what happens. And
I would have definitely.
Yeah. It was 10 episodes. I got paid like 10 grand to do it.
Sweet.
Free vacation.
Yeah.
Met some cool people. I have clips that I show people. It made a really good bar story after like when I was going out, I'd be like, hey, my friends, they'd be like, hey, he's on a reality show. Yeah. That was
crazy. Have any good dates on that one?
My girlfriend now is like super regular, down to earth, good girl next door, which I always was attracted to. The girls on the show were like that influencer, LA, not really doing shit. But
really into themselves.
Yeah,
like
I'm not into that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the guys were cool. The guys were all regular. It was weird how the girls really didn't have, it was just not my thing. Like, gotcha. I'm not into that whole social media thing. Mm-hmm. I'm not into 200,000 followers. I'm not into OnlyFans. I'm into just a regular, good old pretty girl next door who comes from a good family and has good, like, morals and things like that.
Yeah.
So I lucked out, but, you know, I don't really talk to that group anymore. For a while, we all kept in touch, but I don't have Instagram anymore. We all had a group chat on Instagram. It was a good time. It was a good experience. And I think everybody, from what I remember, there was a couple, but I think they had broken up, but they lasted like 2 years from that show. They were the only couple that actually like stayed together.
Gotcha.
They moved in together and shit. But yeah, that being on a reality show is fucking wild, dude. Cause you have a camera in your face all the time.
You have to like all the time and shit.
You cannot take the microphone off. There's cameras in every corner of every room. No lights can go off because they have to be able to move in and out and film things. So like we have to sleep with the lights on. Jeez. There was no doors on anything. So bathroom, bedroom, because they have to get in and out with the camera.
How long were you gone for?
We filmed 10 episodes. They did like a self-quarantine because it was during COVID. Mm-hmm. So I was stuck in a hotel room with a guard outside my door for a week before we even got on the show to like self-quarantine because I was flying in from a different country. And then I didn't know this. I came in. They call it in the show world a disruptor. And disruptor comes in like halfway through. So they didn't know I was coming in. So they had already established like relationships and like connections. And I came in as like to fuck it all up. So I had to stay. I had to stay in my hotel room for like a week and a half. Everybody else was like a week. And I didn't know anything. They just basically put me in the hotel room. I was able to go out like literally like prison, like once a day to work out. And then I was in the room. That was it.
Oh.
So they would bring me food and shit. So anyway, and then the actual show filmed for like two weeks. We did an episode a day. We filmed all fucking day. And then 2 weeks of filming, I would say, and then we went home.
Yeah. Sounds exhausting.
Yeah, it was a lot. Like, I'm not really a big party or drinker anymore. And there was alcohol. They liquor you up because they wanted me to feel loose and comfortable on camera. They had probably the size of this room, stocked for 10 days.
Really?
Stocked.
And really? Help yourself.
Breakfast, lunch, dinner. Mimosas, shots. It was, you're on no sleep, you're on no energy, and you're drinking all the time, and you're not really eating. Yeah, and you're in the fucking Colombian like jungle.
Yeah. Yeah. I was always curious, like how, like the time frame of the shooting. Yeah.
We were doing an episode. So we'd have three shoots a day. We'd have one shoot in the morning that was like an intro. We'd have a shoot in the middle of the day, which was like the challenge. And the third shoot was party selection and then the selection and then
elimination
the
or whatever.
Yeah. So it was like it was down to us. But the crew, dude, the crew was a 350 person crew.
Oh,
for 12 for 16 people. It was like a movie production. Mm. Like it was crazy. Pretty crazy.
Damn,
huh.
Dude.
That's yeah, wild. So that was just that was just crazy.
Well, and weren't you like fixing, I know this is kind of a completely separate topic, but it's something to maybe think about. Weren't you like fixing up like some campers? Airstreams and stuff?
Yeah, I did that. So also during COVID, when I get bored, I start thinking of all this random shit. I bought these old campers because I at the time when COVID was happening, everybody was going outside, right? They wanted to be out in nature and experience things. So I was like, well, shit, I want to, you know, do something with this. I have the Airbnbs. My Airbnb was not doing well at the time. So I bought these campers, renovated them with a buddy of mine. They're not Airstreams, but they, you know, Airstreams are a whole different thing. But they're like these, they're 1960s, like they're called Shastas. They're like little toasters. So my buddy owns a farm. We put them on there. We rent them out on the weekends. It's a whole outdoor.
You still do that?
Yeah, we still do that. Oh, yeah, cool. I'm trying to actually get rid of them because with real estate and everything going on, it's hard to manage. I mean, honestly, the guests are a pain in the ass because they're not used to camping. They think that it's Instagram and Pinterest and not true reality of like being in the Missouri heat in the middle of the summer or being rained on. So we've had a lot of complaints about, you know, weather, shit we can't control.
Right.
And if I'm doing the real estate stuff and all that stuff, I don't want to be dealing with a guest that's complaining about, you know, it's too hot. I'm like, well, sorry, dude, you're camping. Yeah, I know what, I can't control that.
It's, you're outside.
So I did, I've done it for two seasons.
Let me call God real quick and turn the heat down.
Just enjoy being out. Like, that's part of the experience of like the unpredictability of being in nature. Like, you know, go float down the river, go fucking bathe. I mean, figure it the fuck out. So
that's the tagline for the
figure it the fuck out, dude. But it's just amazing how like they think we're like a concierge where we can control things. So I'm actually in the midst of selling them to somebody, a younger two guys that are part, like they have been in school together, they are friends, so they're gonna run it through my friend that owns the farm, so that way I can focus on real estate and other stuff. Because it's in Eureka, so it's 45 minutes to flip them. If there's a guest problem, I have to go out there. So we're actually supposed to close on the sale today or tomorrow.
Oh, nice. That's awesome. Congrats. That's awesome, man.
Well, man, it's been quite a ride. And I'm sure that we've got more. We'll have to get you back on here. And
this was fun, man.
Yeah, this was a good time. But we like to
all over the place.
Yeah, we like to end our episode with a surprise question. We call it the Tombstone Game. All right.
Damn. Okay.
So
put me on the spot, man.
All right. Here rises Lion. Ryan, what does it say on your tombstone?
Wait, to side note on that, you know what animal I was on the show?
Okay. Let's hear it.
What was it?
Ryan the Lion.
Ryan the Lion.
Ryan the Lion. When they gave me that, I'm like, oh, this is perfect. This is perfect.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Ryan the Lion.
All right. Tombstone game. Yeah. Here lies the Ryan. Dash. What does it say on your tombstone?
Damn.
Hey,
figure it the fuck out.
I figured it the fuck out.
Figure it the fuck out.
I figured it the fuck out.
Yeah, seriously.
I love that.
That's everything. Awesome. I mean, everything at the end of the day, you can, if you try hard enough, I believe, is figure outable. You know, you just gotta, you know, yeah. I would say
that's perfect.
Figure it out.
Perfect.
Awesome.
Awesome, man.
All right, guys. Well, thanks to everybody for paying attention. If you haven't clicked subscribe yet, please hit subscribe. That helps us out a ton. Hit that like button, comment what you guys thought below, and we will see you next time.